Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to the Shankranti special afternoon satsang. Of course, we will be continuing with the Ram Katha Rasavahini, but dear listeners, this is something very important and amazing that we would like to share with you before we go into the afternoon satsang, and that is the drama presentation that was put up by the students of the main campuses of the Sri Satya Institute of Higher Learning on the 14th of January. In case you missed watching it live, or in case you have not yet watched it till now, it is already available on YouTube. It is available as a Radio Sai video. Do watch it, because it is something that is really life changing. You can make out how wonderful it was, because this is the first thing that we are speaking even before we have offered our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of beloved Swami. And I am sure that Swami sitting in the studio here will forgive us of this lapse, because I am sure that Swami, in each one of us who was present in the Kulwant Hall or watching it live via Radio Sai, would have felt the same, because the drama in short brought out the reason behind the Lord taking avatarhood. In fact, the reason why I am mentioning that here is because it has bearing on our Ram Katha Rasavahini discussion also. We often have stated that Rama was on a mission to annihilate Ravana. It's after watching the drama and having some internal churning done while reading the Ram Katha Rasavahini that we understand that Rama's sole objective was not to annihilate Ravana. It just happened on the sidelines. The objective behind the Lord taking avatarhood is something much more subtle, much more sublime, so much more deep, profound, and so beautiful. Instead of revealing it here, I hope that this acts like a teaser campaign for making you want to go and watch that beautiful drama, which is available on the Radio Sai site. With that, you know, we offer this segment with great love and gratitude to Swami. Our pranams also to Lord Shri Hanuman, who is ever present whenever the Ram Katha is discussed, sung, or spoken about. And before we begin, let us immerse ourselves in the feelings of love for our dear Lord by listening to the chant of the beautiful name of Lord Rama.
Shri Raghavam Dasharatatmajama Prame Patim Raghukulanmaya Ratna Deepam Ajanu Bahum Aravindadalayataksham
Sairam listeners, and now it's time to continue with the story of the Ramayana as written by our dear Lord. But even as Arvind was referring to that drama which happened last week, yesterday, the drama which was staged yesterday, of course I should also add that all through this week we've been having wonderful programs. I think that presentation by the Anantapur campus was also brilliant, you know, so much of content to be so crisply put in one hour of a presentation. They covered so many religious faiths and how each one is evolved and how the way we look at God itself is actually colored by all these different faiths and what each of these faiths have journeyed through the path of time.
And of course, if we go before that, there was the sports meet, and this time seeing the sports meet was a totally different experience for me for various reasons. One, mm-hmm. the direct reason is along with the video cameraman from Team Radio Sai, I too got the chance to go atop the Shanti Vedika. Mm-hmm. I think this was for the first time in history that we did a coverage from top of the Shanti Vedika, and you can see the beautiful shots. It's there on the website. That is only a personal reason, but the main reason was this was so fantastically different, this whole sports and cultural meet, because all the campuses came together and put up a combined presentation, which usually does not happen because every year each campus puts up a presentation. So the students and the teachers, they were very, very determined that we should do something very different and something beautiful as we kick off the year marking Bhagwan's 90th year of Advent. The year had been kicked off beautifully on the 1st of January by the alumni drama, which was beautiful again, evoking so much of love for Swami and this sports season. Dear listeners, really, you know, we feel that if possible, do make it a point to be present at Prashanthi Nilayam during the sports and cultural meet week. It is 1 week filled with sports and cultural events, music, band, drama, dance, sports, so much, and above all, you know, sublimating all these and present as an undercurrent in all these is that intense pining and love for Bhagwan. It will be an experience to remember. So, if possible, try to be here. If not, do definitely log in and watch out for this week, especially when it comes again in 2016. But for those of you who have missed it, it's available on the site. Please go and watch it. It is definitely an experience that you will cherish. So, yes, coming back to the theme with which we began, it is not as if the Lord comes with a one-pointed focus or mission. It is not as if Krishna came to annihilate Kamsa or Rama came to kill Ravana. There is something far deeper. In fact, I'm jumping the gun and going much ahead, but this was one episode that was presented in the drama as a very thought-provoking question. Mm-hmm. If Rama has come to annihilate Ravana, how do you explain this episode? And they showed the episode, and it is recorded in the Ramayana. What happens is, the bridge has been built, the Vanara Sena, the monkey army, the entire army has crossed over, and Rama is on the shores of Lanka, ready to launch an attack, and at that point in time, Rama says, you know, let us give peace another chance, a final chance. Let us send an emissary of peace to Ravana. If he can hand back Sita in all dignity and respect, we just return, and there is no need for a war, there is no need of bloodshed. And at this point in time, the other chieftains and the army generals are very, you know, upset. They're saying, Rama, you know, we have done all this and come till here. Lakshmana, in fact, his blood boils. He says, you know, Lakshmana is Ashukopa. He gets angry very easily. He also is Ashutosha because he becomes happy also very easily. So he says, brother, what is this? This is a person for whom we have done all this. You know, we have traveled through the jungles, we have gone through so much hardship, and now when we are on the threshold of a victory, why should we give in? Rama says, no. If Ravana surrenders, then we can prevent this bloodshed. That is Rama's stance. That is the point in time when Sugriva, the monkey king, he brings up a interesting doubt, you know, it's a problem actually. He says, Rama, by this time, Ravana's brother, younger brother Vibhishana has already joined Rama's forces, and Rama has coronated him as the king of Lanka, the emperor of Lanka. Because once Rama gives a word, it is a word. And so Sugriva says, now you have already coronated the Vibhishana as emperor of Lanka. Now if Ravana surrenders, what will you do? I mean, he's surrendering, so you can't vanquish him. Therefore, now you are having two kings for the same throne. And Rama says, if Ravana surrenders, I shall request my brother Bharata. He will step aside and Ravana shall become the emperor of Ayodhya. And when this episode is presented, you know, it really brings that question. If Rama has come with the single pointed focus of annihilating Ravana, how on earth can he simply sabotage his entire divine mission in one statement? I mean, there was a very good chance that if Ravana surrenders, the whole mission will get sabotaged. That in itself, you know, the drama was presented as a court scene. So there, the devil's advocate, which was sage Narada himself, says that, see, if Rama's mission was not just to annihilate Ravana, annihilating Ravana just happened along the sidelines. His mission was something far more profound. And that, I think, you know, as you said, Prem, Bhagwan beautifully delineates at the beginning of the Bhagavata Vahini.
Right. In fact, you know, in the Bhagavata Vahini, there are a couple of examples that Swami gives. One thing, first of all, he says is, It is often said that God incarnates to vanquish the evil. Because always we have this scene in our mythology, even when we see these teleserials and all that. You would have these hordes of the devas going to Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva and praying to him to have compassion and come and destroy the evil which is troubling them or something. And then the Lord incarnates. But Swami is saying that that's definitely not the case at all, because God does not incarnate to vanquish the evil. Swami says the primary reason why God incarnates is to give joy and fill with happiness those that have pined for the Lord. He says that is the primary motive. In fact, even if you go back to that Bhagavad Gita shloka where Krishna says, you know, the way it is worded itself is very good. It's, as many times Swami would himself say, Sanskrit is a very beautiful language, which, you know, oftentimes we talk about reading between the lines. In Sanskrit, you always have to read between the lines, because even that shloka
also,
where...
Between the lines also, huh?
Right, where it says, Paritranaya Sadhuna,
Vinashaya Chatushkritam.
If you see, the first one which is mentioned is Paritranaya Sadhuna. I have come to foster those who are pious. And it says, Vinashaya Chatushkritam. It's is like, I come for fostering the good, but I also vanquish the evil. It's almost like, having come down, why not even do that? Right?
Very, very interesting point, Prem. Yes.
In fact, Swami says that, and the wonderful example that Swami gives, I think it's beautiful the way Swami says. He says, why does a cow give milk? Okay. Swami says, you may do 100 things with their milk. You may make cheese out of it and put it on your pizza. But the milk the cow gives is for the calf. So Swami says, similarly, if you ask, why does the avatar come, you know, into human realm, the only reason is to give happiness and to foster the goodness in people. All other things are only, you know, byproducts of that act.
When you mentioned that Bhagavad Gita shloka, I was reminded of a variant of the same that Bhagwan has given. You know, Swami says that in, for example, when he came as Lord Narasimha or the Varaha avatar, that time all the evil was in one. You know, or even if we take the case of the Rama avatar, it apparently was completely in one individual in the case of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and a few individuals when it came to Rama. So, the first two avatars, that is Varaha and Narasimha, had to vanquish and kill one person each, while Rama had to kill a few people, a few demons. By the time of Krishna, it spread and it was in one entire family. It's almost like there is one good half and a bad half. So almost like one half had to be vanquished. But Swami says in the Kali Yuga, every individual has good and bad. So now it has to be done at a subtle level where the good in a person is fostered and that leads to the destruction of the bad. So a modified shloka has been presented where Swami says, పరిత్రాణాయ సాధూనాం, పరివర్తనాయ చ దుష్కృతాం, ప్రేమ సంస్థాపనార్థాయ సంభవామి పదే పదే. ఇట్ జస్ట్ మీన్స్ ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు యు నో ఫాస్టర్ ద వర్చ్యుయస్, ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మ్ ద వికెడ్, అండ్ ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు ఎస్టాబ్లిష్ ప్రేమ. దేర్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ధర్మ సంస్థాపన, హియర్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ప్రేమ సంస్థాపనార్థాయ సంభవామి పదే పదే. యుగే యుగే ఇస్ ఆఫ్టర్ ఏజ్ ఆఫ్టర్ ఏజ్. పదే పదే మీన్స్ అట్ ఎవ్రీ స్టెప్, అట్ ఎవ్రీ మూమెంట్. Why I said it's interesting is, if you look at the two stanzas, almost everything is changed except for the first statement, which is paritranaya sadhunam, which means according to the times, according to desha, kala, paristhiti, the other objectives might change. Whether you want to destroy the wicked or you want to transform the wicked, whether you want dharma to be the main pillar on which you base the mission, or whether you want prema to be the main pillar, all these might change, but paritranaya sadhunam has remained constant. So, you know, that is what actually the drama also brought out. I'm letting it out, I know, but it is so beautiful that God just comes to foster goodness and, you know, nobility. That's all. Everything else is incidental.
In fact, you know, that is the part of the equation which God, you know, manipulates to even destroy the evil, in a sense. You know, I'm just... maybe I'm going off the track, but I think it's very necessary to understand some of Swami's acts, to understand some of what happened in the Rama Avatar and the Krishna Avatar. In fact, I don't know whether we mentioned this before. There is a story which was, you know, a legend which some of my teachers in Vrindavan, our teachers in Vrindavan used to tell us about an incident from the life of Rama Brahmam. When, you know, he used to be the caretaker in Vrindavan Ashram. And many times in the night, he used to go around the ashram just to see if everything is safe, you know, as a security checkup. So whenever he would walk into the dark all alone, he would hear some sounds of some, you know, anklets following him.
Oh.
It's a very strange thing, and many of us know that it's something worth being scared of. But he would, you know, ignore it because it was Swami's ashram, Vrindavan, you know, nothing to fear, Swami's always there. But he would hear that for many years, you know, he would hear that. When he would walk alone, he would hear this anklets following him. One day Swami called him and apparently gave him a work which had to be completed in another city. So Swami told him, you go to this particular city, you go and stay in this particular hotel or lodge. Swami gave him a name. He said, finish the task, don't do anything else, don't meet any other acquaintance or family, and just come back. And apparently in that particular hotel when he was staying that night, this spirit or evil spirit, whatever it was, tried to attack him there, and Swami appeared in that room and kind of vanquished that spirit and saved him. So that was the experience he had. So he comes back and Swami tells him that, you know, why he had to do that. Swami said, this thing was after you, but it couldn't lay its hands on you when you were in the ashram.
No, but the question that arises, Prem, is why did not in Trai Vrindavan itself?
Right, exactly. So Swami said, see, it cannot attack you in the ashram, and I cannot punish till it attacks you.
Okay.
So what I had to do is I had to send you out of the ashram, making you do my work. So when you're going out doing my work, when it comes and tries to attack you, I have all the responsibility to come and vanquish it and save you. So if you look at it that way, if you see all the, you know, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, you know, Hiranyakashipu is doing all kinds of atrocities, but until Prahlada as a devotee was sent into that household, and he was put in a situation where Hiranyakashipu tortured that, you know, little devotee of his, the Lord did not decide to come and punish him. And the same thing if you see even in the Ramayana, you know, Ravana has been ruling and troubling people for so many years, but he sent Sita, who was so devoted to himself, to the very Lanka which, you know, he was ruling, and he said, now I have a reason to come and attack you and finish you off. So it's almost like the first and primary idea of the advent of the Lord's presence in all our lives is, you know, if there is a trace of goodness, I will foster it until till that becomes the predominant nature in you.
At this point, Prem, just the inspiration from within was to take this little detour. You mentioned about this spirit that was, you know, behind Rama Brahmam. I remember in a previous satsang when we had spoken about spirits possessing people, we had received a few mails in which people said that, you know, the spirits thing is not actually scientific. Today, modern psychiatry has recognized this to be whatever various, and there is a scientific explanation for what modern science believes that the ancients foolishly believed as being possessed by spirits or ghosts or whatever. But many occasions, you know, recently I was reading a discourse in which Bhagwan delivered in 1970. I forget the date. It was to an All India conference. And in that also, you know, Swami mentions that you will come across some people who claim that they have got Swami's powers and Swami has endowed them with power and they will be able to do some of the things that Swami is doing. You know, Swami says, and Swami says, don't ever listen to them because I have no need for any agents. This is the word Swami uses. And Swami says, when they are doing like that, it is some kind of a cheap trick or a spirit which has possessed them. Swami says that in the discourse. So, in another discourse too on this matter, Swami speaks about the same thing, that is a spirit possessing. So, which shows that there is something, just because we don't understand it today, we cannot debunk it completely. So, while psychiatry and modern science has some explanations for some of the hallucinatory experiences that people have, it cannot be used as conclusive proof to say that it is wrong to say that a spirit or ghost possesses somebody, because Swami has in fact done it, and we know of so many cases which in Swami in his younger days has actually depossessed people who were possessed by such spirits. So I just thought this was an aside, but since the matter came up, I just thought of narrating it.
I mean, of course, I remember that mail which came. But as you said, you know, there is so many things which is beyond science. Definitely we agree it. And yeah, why not be humble enough to say that there can be some things which we cannot explain right now? And you know, going back to this, practically looking at, you know, the episode of Sita going into Lanka and Ram, I think this is something which we might go through in our day-to-day life. You would find that you have not done anything wrong to anybody, but you are in a situation where you are in the midst of all the evil people or the wrongdoers, and you wonder why has Swami put you in there. Maybe it is a signal that Swami is, you know, sending you there to use you as a via means to transform that, you know,
transform
situation.
Or destroy, either way.
Right, either way. Because it's also a signal to us that we have to hold on to that devotion and love and purity. You know, being in a situation like that does not warrant you to change your nature.
Along similar lines, I think we have mentioned this in a previous satsang, but it's relevant here. I remember a discussion that a few teachers in the university were having about this very same thing of the Lord taking avatarhood. Why does the Lord take avatarhood? You know, if it is in order to vanquish the evil, you know, there are the four yugas, that is the Satya Yuga, the Treta Yuga, the Dwapar Yuga and the Kali Yuga. And each yuga progressively is worse than the previous one.
Right.
So in Satya Yuga, there were some 5-6 mini avatars. Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasimha, Vamana, you know. And as so many avatars have come in Satya Yuga, but still, they couldn't stop it from changing into the Treta Yuga. Then in Treta Yuga, towards the end, comes Rama. And what does he do? Does he change Treta back to Satya Yuga? No. After Treta Yuga comes Dwapara Yuga. And towards the end of Dwapara Yuga, who comes? Lord Shri Krishna comes. And is he able to transform Dwapara back at least to Treta? Forget to Satya Yuga, at least to Treta? No. We read of how towards the end of Parikshit's reign, Kali has already entered. Kali Yuga has already come. So suddenly, you know, it makes you look, makes you feel as if all the avatars have failed. None of them seem to have prevented the world from slipping into worse times. That is where we have to remember that, you know, destruction of the wicked or transformation of the wicked is just a side role. The main thing is fostering of love for God in hearts of people. And in that perspective now, Prem, if you look at it, how much of love is there for Rama today? I am sure that Rama, in his times in Treta Yuga, would not have had this much adoration. Of course, we are going to see how much adoration he will receive now in Ayodhya as he is leaving towards the forest. But that is localized to Ayodhya alone. Today, in Canada, in America, in Europe, in Australia, there are temples for Lord Sri Rama. Now, how do you say that? I mean, there is so much of love for Rama. The same thing, love for Krishna. And even, you know, why stick to this, if we look across religions also, the love for Jesus. I mean, it almost is certain that no man of God or no God, no Messiah, no prophet, nobody has been able to come on earth and stop the wicked. Buddha, the Prophet Muhammad, whoever have come, they have not been able to stop. It is just that they have brought about love in the hearts of people towards God, and I feel that's all, that is the secret behind avatarhood, to foster the good, to nourish the good, and to increase love for God in the hearts of people.
Very true. I mean, just going by the story we are studying right now, the Ramayana, at best, the most predominant person who was vanquished was Ravana. Maybe the other ones like Surpanaka, Tatki, and Maricha, and Subahu, and all that. But compared to the number of people whose lives Lord Rama touched, you know, compared to the number of people whose life literally got sanctified, you know, by the presence of Lord Rama, if you compare that, that itself shows that, you know, this was definitely, the weightage for this was more than the vanquishing of the evil.
In fact, we will see as Rama goes to the forest, definitely he kills a few demons here, demons and rakshasas here and there. But the number of sages and saints and hermits whom he blesses, Shabari who has been waiting for him, we will come across so many. And even some of the rakshasas, they have actually been devas or people of good birth who have been cursed to be rakshasas. They are awaiting redemption at the hands of Rama. So, personally, I have no doubts left about the purpose behind the Lord's avatarhood, and his mission cannot be narrow-mindedly thought as destruction of one individual or destruction of a few individuals. The Lord never comes to destroy. The Lord always comes to build. While building, on the sidelines, if some destruction happens, it happens. But the Lord always comes to build. That's what our Sai has also done in our heart. He has built that edifice of love so strong that all of us, you know, are convinced that if we have that love of Sai and love for Sai in our hearts, we need nothing else in this world. That is the miracle, the true miracle, the miracle of love, as Swami says, that the avatar achieves.
And actually, this is one of the reasons when you look at how, in a sense, Lord Rama was literally obsessed to leave for the forest. You know, I'm sure that all these people whose lives have been waiting to be touched by, you know, the Lord, all of them would be in his mind, because so much of desperation he is showing. Because except for that one moment when he was told to go to the forest, and except for that one individual, Kaikeyi, even her nature was revealed to us by Swami, you know, why she asked for it. Nobody actually wanted to let go of Lord Rama. Nobody wanted. And here was he finally, you know, with Sita and Lakshmana, he's gone to the presence of Dashrata. He's gone to seek permission to leave. And Dashrata is literally rolling on the floor, saying that, no, please don't go. And, you know, making it very clear. Because even the very argument which Rama gave Lakshmana, that, you know, father was silent. Even though Kaikeyi was the one who communicated the wish of father, father was himself silent. But even that has been negated now, because Dashrata is rolling on the floor and saying that, please don't go. You know, he's cursing Kaikeyi for having asked for those boons. And he's saying that, you still don't have to follow her. I am pleading with you. Nobody wants you to leave, you can stay back.
It almost looks like, you know, this was Rama's equivalent of saying, my devotees are calling me, I have to go.
Right.
That is what Swami did. You know, in one moment, nobody wanted Swami to do what he did. I mean, his parents wanted him, the family, whatever. But Swami just said, my devotees are calling, I can't wait any longer, I have to go. He just threw whatever he had as his possession. That time it was just a bag of books. And he walked away. Rama too did the same. Only thing is, this time his possession was a kingdom, that's all. For the Lord, there is no difference between a book and a kingdom, between gold and between dust. It is the same for the Lord. And therefore, when the time comes and he has to respond to his devotees calling him, the Lord drops whatever he's having and just sets out. And that is what Lord Rama did. Dear listeners, we feel that this is a perfect point where we'll pause and play a clip from Bhagwan's discourse. There are two reasons for this. One is that it is a best possible summary of the previous 2-3 satsangs, where Swami summarizes beautifully and says what has happened. This will be advantageous for those who have missed. And also, in this discourse clip, Swami touches on a certain subtle points which none of us would have ever thought of, which we shall discuss and bring up after we listen to this discourse. This discourse is from the 1990 summer course.
Yeah, this is from the 1996 summer course.
Oh, okay.
The 22nd of May. So we'll listen to this clip, which is a beautiful, insightful and a good summary for the story thus far.
పట్టాభిషేకమునకు సిద్ధముగా ఉండినటువంటి రాముడు,
రామా ఇస్ రెడీ ఫర్ కరోనేషన్,
ఇక్కడ చక్కగా మీరు గుర్తించాలి. అనేక మంది జాతకాలని ముహూర్తాలని ఈ పిచ్చి పిచ్చి భావాలు పెట్టుకుని కొంతవరకు తబ్బిబ్బైపోతుంటారు.
పీపుల్ ఆర్ కన్ఫ్యూజ్డ్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ సర్టన్ ఫీలింగ్స్ రిలేటింగ్ టు ది హారోస్కోప్స్.
ఈ పట్టాభిషేకమునకు ఎవరు ముహూర్తం పెట్టిండేది?
హూ హడ్ సెట్ దట్ ఆస్పిషియస్ మూమెంట్ ఫర్ కరోనేషన్?
సాక్షాత్ బ్రహ్మర్షి అయినటువంటి వశిష్ఠుల వారే పెట్టాడు.
వశిష్ఠాది బ్రహ్మర్షి,
బ్రహ్మర్షి అయినటువంటి వశిష్ఠుల వారు ఈ యొక్క పట్టాభిషేకం ముహూర్తం పెట్టారు.
బ్రహ్మర్షి వశిష్ఠ ఇస్ ద వన్ హూ ఇస్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్
రాముని యొక్క కారనేషన్.
నెక్స్ట్ మార్నింగ్ హీ షుడ్ బి కరోనేటెడ్.
కానీ అదే సమయానికి అరణ్యానికి పోవలసి వచ్చింది.
ద సేమ్ టైమ్ హీ హస్ టు బి సెంట్ టు ఎగ్జైల్.
జాతకం యొక్క తప్ప లేక ముహూర్తం తప్ప?
దట్స్ ది మిస్టేక్ లైన్.
లేక పెట్టిన వారి తప్ప?
ఆర్ ద పర్సన్ దేర్?
కాదు కాదు.
నో,
ఇది కేవలము రామ సంకల్పమే దీనికి మూల కారణం.
ఇట్స్ ఓన్లీ ది విల్ ఆఫ్ రామ దట్ ఇస్ ద కాజ్.
దీనికి ఇంకా కొన్ని చరిత్రలు బ్యాక్గ్రౌండ్ లో ఉంటున్నాయి.
దేర్ఇస్ ఆల్సో సర్టన్ బ్యాక్గ్రౌండ్ బిహైండ్.
ఒకానొక సమయం లోపల,
ఎట్ వన్ టైమ్,
కైక దగ్గర చాలా సన్నిహితంగా ఉంటున్న సమయంలో,
వెన్ సో ఇంటిమేట్ టు కైక,
రామును కైకతో చెప్తూ వచ్చాడు.
రామ వాస్ టెలింగ్ కైక,
అమ్మా దీనికి నీవు సంసిద్ధంగా ఉంటుండాలి.
మదర్ యు బి రెడీ ఫర్
రాక్షస సంహార నిమిత్తమై నేను అరణ్యానికి పోవాల్సి వస్తుంది.
టు కిల్ ది డెమన్స్ ఐ మే హావ్ టు గో టు ది ఫారెస్ట్.
కానీ నీకు కొన్ని అపకీర్తులు వస్తాయి.
యు విల్ బి పుట్ టు డిస్రిప్యూట్.
వచ్చినప్పటికీ నీవు ఏమాత్రము దాన్ని లక్ష్యం చేయవద్దు.
బట్ డోంట్ కీప్ ఇన్ వ్యూ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్.
నన్ను అరణ్యానికి పంపించేటువంటి కోరిక నీవు ఒకటి కోరుకో.
యు డిజైర్
కోరుకో.
యు డిజైర్
ఈ విధంగా రాములే మొట్టమొదట కైక చెప్పాడు.
సో రామ టోల్ కైక
రామాయణంలో కూడా లేదు.
ఇస్ నాట్ దేర్ ఇన్ ఎనీ
రామాయణ. కైక చెడ్డది కానే కాదు.
కైక ఇస్ నాట్ బ్యాడ్.
కైక చాలా మంచిది.
కైక ఇస్ వెరీ గుడ్.
రాముల విషయంలో అప్పుడు ప్రాణ సమానంగా చూసుకునేటువంటిది.
షీ కన్సిడర్ రామ యాజ్ హర్ వెరీ
లవ్. భరతుని కంటే రాములంటే చాలా మరింత ఇష్టము.
షీ లవ్డ్ రామ మోర్ దాన్ భరత.
కన్న కుమారుని కంటే పెంచిన కుమారుని పైన ప్రేమ మరింత అధికము.
మోర్ దెన్ హర్ ఓన్ సన్ షీ లవ్ రామ మచ్ మోర్.
ఇవి రెండు రహస్యాలు తన దగ్గరనే పెట్టుకున్నారు ఇద్దరు.
బోత్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్ నో దిస్ సీక్రెట్.
సరే, అరణ్యానికి బయలుదేరాడు.
హీ స్టార్టెడ్ ప్రొసీడింగ్.
ఆనందంతో బయలుదేరాడు.
వెరీ హ్యాపీ వైల్ గోయింగ్.
ఎవరైనా మానవులు సహజంగా ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క సందర్భం లోపల ఆనందాన్ని అనుభవిస్తారా?
ఎనీ పర్సన్ హ్యూమన్ ఫర్ దట్ మ్యాటర్
ఉన్నటువంటి వాడు కఠినమైన అడవి లోపల 14 సంవత్సరాలు సంచరించమని కోరినప్పుడు ఎంత దుఃఖిస్తారు, ఎంత విలపిస్తారు, ఎంత నిరాశకు గురి అయిపోతారు?
ద వన్ హూ ఇస్ టు బి కోరనేటెడ్ హ్యాస్ టు ప్రొసీడ్ టువర్డ్ ద ఫారెస్ట్. నేచురలీ విల్ బి ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ గ్రీఫ్.
కానీ రాములకు అలాంటి వియోగం కానీ అలాంటి దుఃఖం కానీ లేదు.
బట్ రామ వాస్ నెవర్ సాడ్.
జగత్తులో ప్రతి ఒక్కటి మంచే.
ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఇస్ గుడ్.
సుఖ దుఃఖే సమే కృత్వా లాభోనా విజయాజయాత్. రెండు కుటుంబ సమత్వంగానే చూసుకోవాలి.
ప్లెజర్ అండ్ పెయిన్ షుడ్ బి ట్రీటెడ్ ఈక్వల్.
నేను ఆనందంగా వెళుతున్నాను అన్నాడు.
ఐఎమ్ గోయింగ్ హ్యాపీలీ.
తల్లి దగ్గరికి వచ్చేటప్పటికి తల్లి చాలా విలపించింది.
వెన్ హీ కేమ్ టు మదర్ షీ
ఫెల్ట్. ఆమె సామాన్యురాలు.
షీ ఇస్ ఆర్డినరీ.
కౌసల్య.
కౌసల్య.
కన్న కడుపు భరించుకోలేనంత బాధను అనుభవిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
ద వెరీ మదర్ షీ కుడ్ నాట్ కంట్రోల్ హర్ గ్రీ.
ఎవరి మాట కూడా వినలేదు.
హీ డిడ్ పే టు ఎనీబడీస్ వర్డ్.
లక్ష్మణుడు కూడా బయలుదేరాడు.
లక్ష్మణ స్టార్టెడ్ ఫాలోయింగ్.
లక్ష్మణుడు ఎందుకోసం బయలుదేరాడు?
వై షుడ్ లక్ష్మణ స్టార్ట్?
లక్ష్మణుడు కూడా నువ్వు తండ్రిని విమర్శించినట్టుగా అనేక గ్రంథాల్లో ఉంటుంటాది.
ఇన్ సర్టన్ టెక్స్ట్ ఇట్ ఇస్ రిటన్ ద లక్ష్మణ
క్రిటిసైజ్ తండ్రిని విమర్శించలేదు.
లక్ష్మణ నెవర్ క్రిటిసైజ్
రామ సంకల్పం. ఏంటో అదంతా మంచిది.
ఇట్స్ ఆల్ రామాస్ విల్.
తన సంకల్పాన్ని అనుసరించడమే నా కర్తవ్యము.
ఆల్ టు ఫాలో హిస్ విల్ ఇస్ మై
అన్నాడు. ఊర్మిళకు చెప్పలేదు.
ఇదింటెల్
సుమిత్రకు చెప్పలేదు.
ఇదింటెల్
తండ్రికి చెప్పలేదు.
ఇదింటెల్
ఎవరికి చెప్పలేదు.
ఇదింటెల్ ఎనీబడీ.
రామునితో బయలుదేరాడు.
హి స్టార్టెడ్ ఫాలోయింగ్ రామ.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క సహజ ధర్మాలు దైవతత్వానికి దైవ శక్తులకు తప్ప మరొక దానికి సాధ్యం కాదు.
దీస్ థింగ్స్ ఆర్ పాసిబుల్ ఓన్లీ టు గాడ్ అండ్ డివైన్ పవర్.
రామ నేను పుట్టడమే నీ సేవ నిమిత్తమై పుట్టాను.
రామ ఐఎమ్ బోర్న్ టు సర్వ్ యూ.
నిన్ను వదిలి క్షణమైనా నేను ఉండలేను.
ఐ కెనాట్ లీవ్ లీవింగ్ యువర్ కంపెనీ ఫర్ ఎ మోమెంట్.
లేకుండా పోతే నన్ను అరణ్యానికి పంపించి నీవు అయోధ్యలో ఉంటుంది.
అదర్వైజ్ యూ సెండ్ మీ టు ద ఫారెస్ట్ అండ్ యూ స్టే బ్యాక్ ఇన్ అయోధ్య.
నేను నీ వెంట రాక తప్పదు అన్నాడు.
ఐ మస్ట్ నెసర్లీ ఫాలో యూ.
రాములంటే లక్ష్మణుడికి చాలా ప్రేమ.
లక్ష్మణ హెస్ ఇంటెన్స్ లవ్ ఫర్ రామ.
లక్ష్మణుడు అంటే రాములకు ప్రేమ.
అండ్ రామ ఆల్సో నోస్
ఈ ఇరువురి ప్రేమల మధ్యలో ఉండినటువంటి సంబంధ బాంధవ్యం అనేటువంటిది చాలా విచిత్రమైనటువంటిది.
అండ్ ఇంటిమేట్ లవ్ బిట్వీన్ ది టూ ఇస్ వెరీ మిస్టీరియస్.
ఎప్పుడు కూడా నువ్వు మహావిష్ణు స్వరూపంగా ఉండినప్పుడు శరతల్పం పైన పండుకున్నట్టు భీష్ముని వలె ఇక్కడ ఆదిశేషుని పైన పవడించినటువంటి వాడు శ్రీరామచంద్రుడు.
జస్ట్ యాస్ భీష్మ లైడ్ ఆన్ ద బెడ్ ఆఫ్ ఆరోస్,
అతనిపై నిరంతరము పవడించినటువంటి వాడు ఈ రాముడు.
సో రామ వాజ్ రిక్లైనింగ్ ఆన్ ఆదిశేష.
కనుకనే ఇరువురికి ఎడబాటు జరగడానికి అవకాశం లేదు.
సో దేర్ ఇస్ నో స్కోప్ ఫర్ సెపరేషన్ బిట్వీన్ ది టూ.
ఇరువురిలో ఉండినటువంటి అంతరార్థాలు వారికి మాత్రమే తెలుసు.
దే నో ది ఇన్నర్ మీనింగ్ బిట్వీన్.
వెళ్లారు,
దే వెంట్,
సరియూ తీరం దాటారు.
అక్రాస్ సరియూ
కాలం అయిపోయింది.
ఇట్ వాస్ ఈవినింగ్ టైం.
ప్రజలందరికీ ఈ రహస్యం తెలియదు.
పీపుల్ డు నాట్ నో.
చాలా మంది అనేక విధములుగా కూడా విలపిస్తూ పరిగెత్తుతూ శ్రీరాముని వదిలి ఉండలేము, మా ప్రాణములు తీసేయమని అనేక మంది ప్రార్థిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
మెనీ పీపుల్ క్రైడ్ అండ్ క్రైడ్ అండ్ దే సెడ్ దే కెనాట్ లీవ్ ది కంపెనీ ఆఫ్
శ్రీరాము. మేము ఎందుకు ఈ దృశ్యాన్ని చూడాలి? ఎందుకోసం మేము బ్రతకాలి?
వై షుడ్ వి సీ ఆల్ దిస్?
మా బ్రతికెందుకు?
బట్ ఫార్
ఇంకా తల్లి దగ్గరికి వెళ్లారు, నమస్కారం చేశారు.
దే డిడ్ నమస్కార్ టు మదర్.
ఇంకా ఆమె చెప్పలేనంత బాధపడుతూ వచ్చింది కౌసల్య.
కౌసల్య వాస్ గ్రీఫ్ స్టికెన్.
కొన్ని నెలల నుంచి కూడా కౌసల్య దగ్గర పోవటం లేదు దశరథుడు.
దశరథ వాస్ నాట్ గోయింగ్ టు కౌసల్య ఫర్ ఫ్యూ మంత్స్ బ్యాక్.
కొంత మంత్సే కాదు, కైక వివాహం జరిగినప్పటి నుంచి కూడా కౌసల్య దగ్గరికి పోవటం లేదు.
రైట్ ఫ్రమ్ ది టైమ్ ఆఫ్ కైకాస్ వెడ్డింగ్ హీ నెవర్ విజిటెడ్ కౌసల్య.
జరుగుతుంటారు, కడపటి భార్య అంటే చాలా ఇష్టం.
ది లాస్ట్ వైఫ్ ఇస్ సో ఎండియరింగ్.
అప్పుడు రాముని చూసి ఈ విధంగా పోయినప్పుడు పంపించింది, రామా నీకు ఈ విధమైన పరిస్థితి వస్తుందని నేను కలలో కూడా తలంచలేదు. ఏ నిమిషంలో నీవు రాజవుతావో ఈ ఆనందాన్ని చూసి నేను ఆనందించాలనుకున్నాను.
ఐ వాంట్ టు బి హ్యాపీ వెయిటింగ్ ఫర్ దట్ మూమెంట్ వెన్ యూ విల్ బి కరోనేటెడ్.
జరగవలసింది జరగక తప్పదు.
వాట్ ఈస్ డెస్టిన్ టు హ్యాపన్ మస్ట్ హ్యాపన్
అని ఆశీర్వదించి
హీ బ్లెస్డ్.
నీకు అరణ్యమే అయోధ్య.
That forest is your own.
ఈ అయోధ్యనే అరణ్యము.
ఫర్ మీ దిస్ అయోధ్య ఇస్ ది ఫారెస్ట్.
నీవు సంరక్షించుకుని నీవు ఈ యొక్క సమయాన్ని తప్పక సద్వినియోగం చేసుకుని రామని.
యూ మేక్ ప్రాపర్ యూజ్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ టైమ్ అండ్ రిటర్న్.
కూర్చుంది.
షీ సాట్.
తనకు తాను ఇంక నేను బ్రతకనక్కర్లేదనుకుంది.
ఐ డోంట్ నీడ్ టు లివ్ ఎనీ లాంగర్.
పతిసుతులకు దూరమైన పడతి బ్రతుకదేలా, పతిసుతులకు దూరమైన పడతి బ్రతుకదేలా, ఏ పాప ఫలంబో నాకు ఈ తాపము కలుగజేసి, ఏ పాప ఫలంబో నాకు ఈ తాపము కలుగజేసి, పతిసుతులకు దూరమైన పడతి బ్రతుకదేలా.
Can any woman live?
ఎందుకు నా బ్రతుకు?
Being separated from.
ఒకవైపున పతికి దూరం అయ్యాను.
And one way I am.
ఒకవైపున సుతునికి దూరం అయ్యాను.
Another way I am.
నేను ఎందుకు బ్రతకాలి? ఎవరి కోసం బ్రతకాలి?
Why should I live? For whose sake should I live?
అని అన్నపానాదులు వదిలిపెట్టి అహోరాత్రములు కూడాను బాధపడుతుండాలి.
She sacrificed the food and drink and she was feeling so sad.
You know, as I said, there are many, many beautiful subtle points in this clip that we heard. The first thing is what Swami said first, that is, there's nothing like a bad muhurtam, because people say that a wrong time was selected for Rama's coronation, and because the time was wrong, it was inauspicious, it resulted in Rama having to go to the forest instead of being crowned as the crown prince. And Swami says there can be nothing more foolish than this, because who had set the time of the coronation? It was Vasishtha, a Brahma Rishi. How can a Brahma Rishi go wrong? Swami says that everything that happens is Rama's will. You know, this is such a powerful message for all of us. We often, you know, blame bad times, bad situations, and anything other than ourselves for whatever bad that is happening. It's a different case when it comes to the good. We take credit for it. But we often try to find external excuses. So while the question might be, if we are not to blame the external circumstances, whom should we blame? Should we blame ourselves? Swami takes the whole debate and discussion to an entirely higher level, where he says, don't even try to spend energy to find out who or what is to be blamed. just accept everything as Rama's will, as Swami's will, as God's will. You know, this is what true surrender is, what Swami has said, that you are able to accept every moment of your life, whatever happens to you, as something that is good for you. And that is the message Swami gives at the beginning of the clip, and it is such a powerful one which Swami has delivered so subtly and so quickly.
Very true. You know, going back to what we were telling about the offer which Rama was ready to give Ravana.
Hmm.
So one thing which Swami would often tell in his discourses, you know, he would say that don't ever think that God punishes you or God rewards you.
Hmm.
Swami would say it's only your actions.
Hmm.
So if one were to think, you know, somebody like Ravana who has done so many atrocities, you know, Sita is definitely not the first one whom he has troubled.
Correct.
And he must have troubled so many people. Can he be forgiven of all those just because he is ready to come and surrender at the feet of Lord Rama?
Hmm.
You know, one might wonder that will everything be forgiven? I think that is where what Swami says is important, because Swami doesn't say that I don't come to punish you. You will seek punishment from your own actions. Good karma or bad karma, you will have to come. And that's why I think somebody once said, you know, is God a perfect businessman? You know, you do good, you're given good in return. You do bad, you're given bad in return. So he said, no, God is actually a very bad businessman. Because when you do bad, whatever bad you've done, you have to answer for it. There's no escape. But for that little good you do, the response is always multifold. That is why even in that discussion, you know, Rama is saying that, let him come and do this one act, I will reward him multifold.
Exactly.
I'm ready to forgive a lot. I think that is what is important. Even in that, this entire Ramayana, you will see that coming over and over again. Being Ahalya, you know, the mistake was there, but when the repentance was genuine, you know, the response was forthcoming.
You know, if that brings up the question as to what about our acts and actions then? I mean, is it possible that I'll just lead my life in whatever way possible? I'll just, you know, have fun and do all the wrong things, and then in the end come and tell, I'll surrender to you, Swami. Will it be fine? Theoretically, yes. If you're able to surrender, yes, everything will be fine. For that act of surrender, the Lord will reward you and it will overcome all these things. But as can be seen, you know, that is why these epics are there. They stand as testimonies and they stand as examples for us. You know, if it was that easy, why did Ravana have to meet his death? Couldn't he have just jumped at this opportunity? That is what, Prem, when you said that we face the fruits of our own actions, that is what happened. I feel that is what prevented Ravana from actually coming and surrendering to Rama, while his own brother, born to the same mother, born with the same tendencies, born in the Rakshasa kingdom, Vibhishana, was able to come and surrender. You know, that shows actually the power of action. Because when both are born in the same environment to the same mother, just by doing good, Vibhishana was able to take the decision to surrender at Rama's feet, while Ravana wasn't able to. So, yes, the Lord uplifts, and you know, one good deed is rewarded to the power of infinity in an exponential manner. But that doesn't take away the fact that to be ready, to be mentally prepared, and to have your heart prepared to surrender to the Lord, you must have those tendencies, and tendencies are built up through our actions. Swami says, sow a thought, reap a, you know, reap an action, sow an action, reap a tendency, sow a tendency, reap a habit, sow a habit, reap a character. So, you know, it all begins that way. So, it's like saying that I will offer the mansion to the Lord, but I will use bad bricks. You just cannot do it. And that is the subtle message that is built in, that we cannot have good ends with wrong means, nor can we have wrong ends if our means have been good.
You know, there is that Chinnakatha which Swami says about a man who is very poor, who is worshipping Lord Lakshmi, and he says that, you know, Mother, please bless me and draw me out of poverty. So then finally Goddess Lakshmi appears in front of him and she says, okay, tell me, what do you want? So he says, I just want prosperity and I'm suffering. So she says, all right, you walk ahead to your house and I will follow you, and I'll follow with all my jewels. When I come to your house, I'll give you whatever I'm wearing, you know, all the jewels which I'm wearing, it'll be all yours. But under one condition, that when you're walking, never once should you stop and turn back.
Hmm.
Okay? And imagine, here is a poor man who's been in poverty all through. And even as he's walking, all the while he's hearing the jingling of all the jewels that Mother Goddess is wearing. So, you know, that curiosity to see what she is wearing. What am I going to be blessed with at the end of this journey? He's not able to contain that curiosity, so he turns back and he sees and the mother vanishes.
Hmm.
So it's almost like that greed with which you seek God will sometime catch up. You know, even if you say that Ravana had a little bit of sense and says that I'm going to come and surrender, I think the greed with which you want to surrender, the motive with which you want to seek God, sometime will catch up with you. That is why even if for a wrong motive if you turn to God, as much as possible try to purify ourselves. I think that is a task which has to be taken upon at the earliest.
Exactly, and as these famous stories of Abu Ben Adam and other things show, even if we don't turn to God, but if our intentions are good, that goodness will automatically get attracted to godliness, and in due course of time, it is nothing, it will not be surprising that goodness also gets attracted to godliness. But getting attracted to godliness for things other than goodness is a sure shot way to go to hell. I mean, I didn't mean it literally, but in the sense of the term. You know, Swami described how the whole kingdom became panicky and they became restless, they became drowned in sorrow at the news of Rama, Lakshmana and Sita leaving the kingdom of Ayodhya. In fact, as you said, Dasharatha was rolling on the floor wailing, and Sumantara, the minister who sees him, anybody who would have seen him wouldn't be able to believe that this is the great monarch, the emperor of the kingdom. And Dasharatha just tells Sumantara that, Sumantara, what have I done? What is this? You please go and get back the trio. You know, get back Rama, Lakshmana and Sita right now. He in fact says that, you know, it'll take them almost a week if they have to reach the forest's edge, the edge of the kingdom to enter the forests. You take them, go and take a chariot for them. Let them not walk all the distance. I can't imagine their tender feet being hurt by the cruel paths. So please go, take a chariot for them. Let them go and go along with them till the very edge of the kingdom. And try your best, make them, you've got 4 days, you know, it takes 4 days in a chariot. You've got 4 days, in those 4 days, try to change their mind. Please, Sumantara, you do this, nothing else you need to do. You don't have to give importance to any other order, any other command. Your sole duty is this, to go escort the trio and try your best to get them back to Ayodhya. Let them not go into the forest. And you know, Swami writes that even as Dasharatha says this, he knows that he is pleading a hopeless case, because he tells that also, Sumantara, I know that Rama will not turn back on the world. He, you know, it's almost as if there is no way that Rama will not enter the forest. Because see, Prem, if there was a chance that Rama is not going to enter the forest, why will he send a chariot to take them till the edge? He could have as well said that you go and try to convince them. Because somewhere deep within, Dasharatha knows that Rama is not going to turn back. So he tells Sumantara, take the chariot, because, you know, let them have a royal journey till the edge of the kingdom. And that is how he sent Sumantara. But even after that, Dasharatha is not at peace.
Absolutely. You know, that entire scene which Swami describes, where Rama, Sita and Lakshmana are being taken by Sumantara, and he says the entire citizenship of, you know, Ayodhya are following, and everybody is running behind the chariots. The younger ones are running for longer distances, and the older ones, after a while, you know, giving up. And even as this entire city of Ayodhya is following the chariot of Rama and Lakshmana, and Sumantara is trying to tell them not to follow, that Rama has taken a resolve, he's not going to be, you know, coerced into not going into the forest, so it's futile to follow him and try to stop him. And even as this whole thing is seen as happening, they find another chariot speeding by. And Swami says that some of them are even swooned and fainted there, and when they hear another chariot go by, they feel that maybe Rama is returning.
Hmm.
But when they see, they actually hear the voice of Dasharatha calling out to Rama, and they find that Dasharatha has taken another chariot and he is pursuing this chariot of in which these three are traveling with Sumantara and trying to stop them.
He is calling out, he is wailing, "Oh Rama, oh Sumantara, oh Lakshmana, stop." In fact, he shouts out to Sumantara. because apparently Rama, Lakshmana and Sita are not hearing him. So he commands, he shouts out, Sumantara, I command you to stop. I want you to stop because I want to have the darshan of my Rama, my beloved, the apples of my eye. I want to look at them for once more. So please stop. He's pleading, beating his chest, egging his charioteer to hurry faster. And at this point in time, Sumantra turns to Rama and says, Rama, I have to stop the chariot. You know, because this is my monarch who is commanding me. And Rama says, no, don't stop the chariot. He says, Rama, how?
Actually, he gives a very interesting argument. He says, see, for 4 days I have to travel with you. But after I leave you at the edge of the city, I have to go back and report to the same Dasharatha.
Correct.
And that time he will ask me, why didn't you stop? I called you. And that is when I think Rama gives that beautiful argument.
Yes, yes. You know, he says that he also offers an alternative. You know, here you can see
right.
Sumantra's devotion to Rama. He says, Rama, so therefore the only way to solve this is, take me also along with you to forest. Then I will have no fear. I will do as you say. Because I don't have to return to Dasharatha now. So you take me also along with you. Which, you know, Rama flatly refuses. He says, no, it is not like that. But let me tell you, you are not disobeying the emperor. Whom you are disobeying now is just Rama's father, Dasharatha. The person who commanded me to go to the forest. You know, this is a very, very subtle point. A very subtle moral principle which gets missed. Where Rama says that the person who commanded me to go to the forest was the emperor Dasharatha. The man now commanding you to stop is not emperor Dasharatha, but Rama's father Dasharatha. You know, so there is your duty is, you know, the higher dharma comes first. Your duty towards society comes before your duty towards yourself. Because it's only when society exists that you exist. So in a similar manner, your duty towards the emperor comes before your duty towards the father of someone you love. And therefore you have to listen to the emperor and not stop. You know, at this point in time, while Sumantra definitely appreciates this subtle point that Rama has made, he is wondering as to how he'll answer Dasharatha. And that is when Rama says that it will not be a mistake even if you say that you did not hear the emperor. And you know, it's a very beautiful, significant thing here. When you say, you did not hear the emperor, Rama has already explained that the person calling out to you is not the emperor. It is the father of Rama. And so, it is not as if you are telling a white lie. What you are telling is absolutely the truth. You did not hear the emperor telling you to stop. Whom you are hearing is Rama's father telling you to stop. So therefore, you can just go back after 4 days when you drop me. You can go and tell the emperor that you did not hear the emperor's cries. And Swami writes that because this happens, Dasharatha tries for some time, his body is weak and his body has got debilitated actually after this stroke of, you know, ill fortune, what he thinks is ill fortune, that Rama is being taken away to the forest, and therefore he stops midway and returns back to the kingdom, to the kingdom's capital.
Right, and Swami says that this crowd is still continuing the chariot. So eventually Rama decides that it's time to stop and maybe try personally to persuade them to return. So eventually Rama and his chariot stop.
Even before that actually, you know, when Dasharatha is calling out to Rama, there's another reasoning that Swami gives in the book. He says, Rama thinks that when Dasharatha is calling me and I'm stopping, see, all the people will get false hopes. There are many whom Rama has seen, as you said, they have swooned and fallen unconscious because they are so sad that Rama is leaving. So Rama thinks that now when his chariot stops, those people who have swooned will wake up and they will get their hopes raised that, you know, possibly Rama is not leaving actually. That will be a more cruel blow because Rama is definitely going to leave. So that is the reason he does not stop when Dasharatha is pursuing him. But once Dasharatha has gone, Rama feels it is fine. Now it is just about him assuaging their hearts and showering his mercy and compassion on them before leaving. You know, it reminds one of how Swami, while doing his long distance travels from various places to various places, he would often stop by and slake the thirst of the people who were pining for darshan and sparshan and sambhashan.
I think sometime back when we were speaking to one of the old students, he was narrating an incident. I think if I'm not wrong, when Swami was going to or coming back from Kodaikanal.
Okay.
Somewhere midway. in one particular village, there's nobody there. It's completely, it's something like the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And there, Swami found a shamiana which was erected. And he found something like close to a few thousand people sitting in absolute silence and sitting very orderly.
Hmm.
And you know, this student was saying that some devotee had absolutely nailed it. Because he said, you know, he thought to himself that you can't stop Swami if you stand on the road in a crowd and you know, if you try to
block
or peek and have a darshan. So he completely removed this crowd away from the highway and put a shed somewhere and made all these devotees sit in absolute silence and in an orderly fashion. And the moment Swami saw that, Swami said, hey, somebody's sitting there for darshan. You know, so much of discipline. Swami stopped and went towards that place.
Wow.
And you know, this person had erected a stage and there was a mic which was kept ready, and you know, Swami was willing to give a discourse. Everything was ready, and Swami just was drawn to that discipline of that few thousand people sitting so quietly.
Wow.
And you know, so Swami went there and he narrates this very beautiful incident of how, you know,
it reminds me of a very similar incident.
Wait, I'll complete this because very beautiful thing which happens there. So Swami goes there. And the moment Swami goes, even more people come. So already the shamiana which has been erected is not enough to house this entire crowd.
Okay.
So Swami goes there. And this person who has arranged this whole thing is so thrilled that Swami has come. So Swami asks him to speak.
Hmm.
So this person starts speaking. And he speaks for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour, 45 minutes, and he's still not stopped. And Swami is looking at the crowd, and Swami is more concerned that people are sitting in, right under the sun. It's sometime in the afternoon. And this person is in his devotional fervor. He's not able to contain himself. He's going on and on. So Swami has to please this devotee. At the same time, Swami is worried about the devotees who are sitting in the sun. So suddenly Swami looks at this man and waves his hand and materializes a sugar candy.
Oh.
So the moment he sees that Swami has materialized something, this person comes. So Swami puts it into his mouth. Literally stuffs his mouth. And, you know, blesses everybody and walks away.
Wow. You know, as I said, Prem, when you were narrating this, I was reminded of a similar episode. This happened in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this because my parents were involved. This was during Swami's visit to Mumbai. And after a darshan in a ground at a place called Goregaon,
mm-hmm.
or was it Malad? I don't remember now. So from there, Swami was headed back towards Dharmakshetra.
Okay.
On the way, Bhagwan said that he would fulfill the promise he had given to a devotee to visit his home. And this devotee's home happened to be in Borivali.
Okay.
And so Bhagwan, you know, my parents were part of the Borivali Samiti. And the Borivali Samiti had adopted a slum called Kajupada, which is close by. And all these slum children, you know, they never had the wherewithal and the means to go to Dharmakshetra for darshan. Even if they managed to go till there, you know, the problem is Dharmakshetra is a very small piece of land there. There's not enough darshan space, and so it was tough to get accommodated. That is why when Swami goes to Bombay, you know, in the last few years we saw, darshan had been arranged in different halls and grounds because Dharmakshetra is woefully inadequate for darshan. So, these children from the slum had not been able to have darshan. And therefore, a request had been made to Swami whether, you know, at one particular point, when he would pass by the national park, the Sanjay Gandhi National Park in Borivali,
mm-hmm.
Whether people can just, you know, there's a large intersection there,
okay.
And a huge parking area for the national park. So, there some people can gather, and as Swami's car passes by, can the driver slow down? But as you said, the devotees there, I think in Borivali Samiti, had hit the nail on the head. They made all these slum children sit, the children in the front, all of them are sitting, a carpet had been put,
mm-hmm.
and in a hurry, a wedding chair, you know, it's not a new chair or anything, just
what
a chair.
What
you hire, just had been hired, and a photograph of Swami had been placed nearby, and they were doing bhajans. Now, Swami went to this devotee's house. But these children and nobody got up. They continue to do bhajans. In fact, this devotee later mentioned that at his home, Swami said that I am able to hear some bhajans. Okay. Which was definitely not possible with the physical ears. And then Swami on the way back stopped the car and lowered the window. He saw this going on and Swami began to open the door. Now this I know because the convener of the samiti rushed up to Swami's door and invited him. And as Swami began to open the door, the administrator, a senior member of Swami's trust who was sitting beside him, told Swami, "Swami, this is not a scheduled stop. You know, this is not in the plans." Swami turned to him and told him, "I want to get down here. Can I?" And this person was all red-faced. Swami got down. He spent almost 5 to 10 minutes with the devotees there, asked for aarti, received aarti. And you know, they were so thrilled. Just like you said, somehow discipline and devotion seem to be powerful magnets, the pull of which even the Lord is unable to resist. And that is exactly what Rama also does, you know. He stops on the way and grants solace and peace and succor, because the people, how long can they run behind? Because he is on a chariot that is commanded by magnificence, by Sumantra, and it's being powered by magnificent steeds. The people will never be able to match that horsepower. So, as and when, you know, Rama sees that they're getting tired and they're pining for him, he stops. He consoles them, assuages them, soothes them. In fact, Rama says, you know, if you really love me, for my sake, please return to your homes. Pray for me. Pray for me. Pray that I'm able to fulfill all my obligations and duties. And when such humility, when their Rama is requesting, the people have no other choice but to obey. With tears down their cheek, you know, they listen to Rama, and many of them get slightly pacified, though most of them continue to wail and cry.
The other thing which Lord Rama does is something which we spoke about last week, where, you know, he tries to tell them what are the difficulties which lay in living in the forest. Because some of them are saying that if you're not living in the Ayodhya, it's no more Ayodhya for us. That becomes the forest, and where you live is the Ayodhya. So we are following with you. I mean, we are following you, and wherever you are putting tent, we are joining you. So that's when Rama starts describing the travails which one would face living in the forest, and it's not easy. I mean, you're not going into an organized city. Everything is going to be difficult to get. You know, it just reminds me of something which happens with all of us in our relationship with Swami. You know, when you come to know that this is divinity incarnate, I think all of us have that spontaneous desire to live with Swami. All of us have that spontaneous desire to live a life which is centered around Swami. You know, you would see this among many devotees who come to Swami in the initial years. But that decision is that of a moment's choice.
It's an emotional one.
It just takes one moment to make that decision. Huh. But to live a decision such as that entire life is a completely different thing. And exactly. I think I'm reminded of an incident which is quoted many times in Swami's presence, where, you know, one Swami looked at one of the boys, I think must be in Trivandrum, and just all of a sudden Swami asked him out of the blue, "What will you do for me? What can you do for me?" And that boy said, "Swami, I'm ready to die for you." And Swami said, "Adikadu Bangaru, I don't want that. Be ready to live for me." Because dying for God is just one moment's choice. I think that has created so much problem in the world today. We know that dying for God is so easy, and you know, it just takes one moment of cowardice, which is wrapped in what we think it is bravery. But actually, it's just one moment. But to live for God means living every moment that choice. And I think that is what, you know, Rama was trying to say, that yeah, eventually, I mean, emotionally you made this decision to follow me, but do you know what lays ahead? You know, after this emotional moment passes, are you ready to put up with all those difficulties which will come when you make this choice?
I remember my teacher from school, Sairam sir, physics teacher. In the first class when I attended, when I was in 11th grade, he asked each one of us, what are our objectives of coming to the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School? And I remember telling him, "Sir, I just want to stay with Swami." So, different people gave different answers. And at the end of the class, actually at the end of the day, maybe it was a couple of days later also, he came up to me and he asked me, "You said that you have come here because you want to stay with Swami. Is that true?" I said, "Yes, sir, that's what I want to do. I mean, academics and all is secondary, but I just want to be with Swami." He made a statement. He said, "You know, this is a decision. This is something that you can easily say when you're in 12th class. If you're able to say this when you're in your second year postgraduate, then know that you mean business." And you know, that is when I realized that possibly as you grow older, you know, as you grow up in education, whatever, maybe it becomes tougher to make this. And so from, I'm expressing my gratitude to Sairam sir, because from then on, I began to pray, Swami, whatever happens, please don't change the resolve of mine. Please let me always want to stay with you. Let me always want to stay with you. And it's with lots of love and gratitude to Swami that I'm saying that even when I reached my second year postgraduate, that fire remained. And, you know, I managed to tell Swami that, Swami, I want to stay with you. But this, the second time was so much more different, I felt, because when I, in the end of my postgraduate study, when I told Swami, I want to be with you, I want to stay with you, I had at least some idea of what it means to stay for Swami, to live with all your focus on Swami. It requires, you know, of course, once you enjoy this joy, you will not call it a sacrifice, but it requires some sort of sacrifices which you don't even think of when you say emotionally, Swami, we want you, Swami, I want to live with you, I want you, nothing else. And as you rightly said, it is easy to state it because it takes only a moment to state, but to live it is a lifelong thing, and it requires a lot of introspection before we are able to take it up.
Right. It's not that we don't mean it when we say it. It's not
exactly.
It's completely a spontaneous thing. But you know, to mean it every moment of our life takes all the more effort.
And commitment.
Commitment. I think that is why some characters in the Ramayana, for instance, the character of Lakshmana, I think it's stupendous. I mean, what he has lived. You know, the commitment with which he told Rama that whatever you do, I am following you. If you're going to the forest, I'm following you. I mean, it was not just that following which mattered. Because, you know, just after we're going to come to that point where, you know, they've crossed the boundaries of the city, they've gone into the forest, Lakshmana is at it already. And he did it for 14 years. You know, every night he wouldn't sleep. And every day he wouldn't eat unless he has got the food for Rama and Sita. He wouldn't, you know, to not sleep, of course, you have all the other background stories which go with it, why Lakshmana never slept and why he had the ability, maybe he had a boon, all that is fine. But the fact is, he said, you know, this is my opportunity to serve you. And he really meant it. You know, he really meant when I said that I'm coming with you, I'm going to serve you for these 14 years till you're back in Ayodhya. I mean, he really lived that commitment, he really lived that decision, he really lived that choice every minute of that 14 years he spent in the forest.
Two words crop up here. One is intensity, one is persistence. What usually happens is, one seems to be inversely proportional to the other. You know, as our intensity increases, our perseverance or, you know, our perseverance seems to reduce. It's like, I can come up with 1 hour of supra intense effort for Swami, and possibly one day of terrific effort for Swami, possibly a week of good effort, but you know, after it pulls on, it wears away. I'm not able to persist. If I'm able to persevere, then I'm just, you know, doing something normally. You know, this is enough. Let me not get excited. Let me not get hyperbolic. Let me just do this much. It's enough. So, intensity and consistency. Intensity versus consistency. I feel we should temper our intensity to such a level that we are able to be consistent in it. It is of no use, especially in the spiritual path. Of course, in other paths also it might be like that, and sometimes it might show reward, but to have a flash of intensity without consistency, or being consistent without any intensity, we need both. And therefore, that is why it requires, intensity is that emotional moment, but consistency is having the determination, like Lakshmana, to carry it out for 14 years. You know, as you were speaking about Lakshmana, I was thinking, Prem, when I got my job in Radio Sai, the excitement, the thrill I had, you know, like, it is like I am walking into a place which Swami has set up, a place where Swami has walked, and I'm working directly for Swami. You know, these were my thoughts. And the kind of, you know, work you're able to churn out is amazing. Some days I remind myself and tell myself that, see, this is what you have to be. That is what is consistency. Can, even after 7 years today, can I walk into Radio Sai with the same enthusiasm, energy, passion, love for Swami, and that feeling of being blessed as I did on the first day? That is what consistency is about. while what I did on the first day is what intensity is about. So if we have intensity, we have to develop consistency. If we are having consistency, we need to develop intensity.
Very true. And in fact, all the characters, if you look at the character of Kaikeyi, having known the fact that, you know, even Swami mentioned in this discourse clip we played today, where Rama goes and requests her to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you see all the subsequent scenes, I mean, she does not even once give a hint that she is pretending. She does not even once give a hint that, you know, I'm in a situation where I can't help it. I'm doing this. You know, she is holding on to that bitter image of herself. Even when Bharata comes, even when, you know, Dashratha is wailing, she knows that she's going to lose her husband, who's, you know, very life for her. Even then, she does not let go, because she said, I've given a word to Rama that I will take upon this ignominy. And, I mean, till the end of Ramayana, I don't think she's revealed it at all.
That's amazing consistency. And her intensity, we will, learn as we go ahead, because nobody even gets the slightest doubt that there is something amiss. Everyone is convinced without a sliver of doubt that Kaikeyi is a villainous, is a treacherous villainous. And so, as you said, amazing consistency and intensity. The one more subtle point, possibly with that we can bring this Ramkathar Satsang to a close. One more subtle point, Prem. You see, this is from the fact that as Dasharatha is running behind Rama's chariot and calling out to Rama to stop, Rama does not stop. He says, this is my father calling out, because he is very attached to me. But the same Rama, once Dasharatha is gone, he stops for the people. This, you know, though it seems like on a subtle way we see, the Lord can never be bound by attachment, by mamakara, by that feeling of belonging, you know. Not feeling of belonging, that's a very nice way to put it. Actually, attachment. The Lord can never be bound by attachment. The Lord can be bound only by love. And love is nothing but selflessness. And therefore, it appears as if what Dasharatha could not achieve, the citizenry of Ayodhya achieved, of making Rama stop. You know, because as Rama himself says, it is attachment from Dasharatha's side that is calling out to me to stop. And the Lord can't be held by attachment. But love is the Lord's greatest weakness. Love is therefore the devotee's greatest strength.
One of the episodes which Swami had told about, of course, in the different yuga, when Krishna is leaving, and you know, all the gopikas are distraught at hearing the news that Krishna is leaving. So they all come running to, you know, Radha and say that, you know, you tell one word, he'll stop. You know, we all can cry and make a scene and do everything, but he will not stop. But you tell Krishna, don't go, he cannot go. You know, he's bound to your word, you just tell him to stop. And this is a beautiful episode, you know, where Radha looks at a pond which is beside her. She's sitting by the side of a pond. And there's the reflection of the moon. Okay, and she looks at it and she says, look at this pond, it reflects the moon. You know, you can see the image of the moon there. How much ever the pond thinks that the moon is mine, how stupid it is. Okay, it should only feel gratified that I am able to hold an image of the moon. Okay, and similarly, as long as we think that, you know, he is bound to my word, I can call him, he is my Krishna, he does not belong to us. At every moment we have to believe that I belong to him, and his choice is my choice. And that was the difference between what Radha was. And even though the other gopikas loved Krishna so much and were ready to give their life for him, the difference between them and Radha was this.
In fact, Prem, you know, we began the satsang speaking about yesterday's drama. Because I have been so charged up by the drama, let me conclude on that dramatic note. You know, yesterday this was the very point which was again presented as the difference between the Yadavas and the Gopikas. While the Yadavas constantly claimed that Krishna is ours, he belongs to our family, the Gopikas always said that we belong to Krishna. And that is why, you know, Krishna is more with the Gopikas than, I mean, Krishna was experienced and enjoyed more by the Gopikas than by the Yadavas. Another beautiful episode, you know, it was brought up about how Mother Yashoda tries to tie Krishna.
Right.
You know, she tries to tie him because he's doing mischief. How much ever she tries, she's not able to bind him. Always the rope is turning out to be short of length. So she tries and tries, she's not able to bind him. And you know, a question is asked, Lord, when your own mother, who has so much love for you, is unable to bind you, how can any devotee hope to bind you? And the Lord answers, you know, in the drama, the way they showed, they bring Mother Yashoda herself to the court. And Mother Yashoda says, you know, every time I tried to bind Krishna, I always would fall 2 fingers short, 2 finger length of cord short. And she said, then I realized that these 2 fingers are that of Ahankara and Mamakara, of ego and my attachment, that this is my Krishna. The minute I let go of it, you know what actually happens, as it's narrated in the Bhagavatam, she says, Krishna, you know, I don't know, but you better tie yourself. And Krishna actually ties himself. That is how it was depicted in the drama. And so the minute you surrender, you know, we started our discussion with surrender, where we don't blame the time. Swami also said, you don't blame the muhurtam as bad or good, accept everything as the Lord. So when, with that surrender, when you surrender to the Lord, that is when you say that, Lord, I can't hold on to you, I can't bind you, I can't do anything, I am nothing, Lord, you are everything. The minute you say you are nothing, the Lord comes and says, no, you are everything. It is paradoxical yet so beautiful. The minute you surrender and say, Lord, I have no control over you, the Lord comes and says, my child, you have all control over me, I am totally your servant. That, with that note, the time in our studios is actually 1:58. Dear listeners, as it happens sometimes, more than the story of Lord Rama, we go through so many beautiful lessons and learnings and experiences with Swami. It is very difficult to separate Rama and Sai Rama, because after all, they are one and the same. And a delighted Hanuman in our studio is proof that whether we speak of Rama or Sai Rama, it is the same Lord we are speaking about, and He is delighted. We thank Swami for this beautiful opportunity.
So dear listeners, we're going to leave you with a song on, of course, Lord Rama. On the other side of it, we'll be playing a rebroadcast of a Love to Love segment. Stay tuned, more programs to come. There'll be a Telugu segment after that. And of course, there is a beautiful Tyagaraja Aradhana program today in the Mandir by the Music College students, as a continuation and, in a sense, conclusion of the annual sports and cultural meet. So till we meet you next week, this is Arvind and Prem offering this humble effort of ours at Swami's Lotus Feet. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Oh, Nagariga Ramadani Sani Rapa Padama Mapa Garita Varakama Ibuka Morakalum Shalidu
Nidu naamam aataranga